It's the confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. With so much information arriving every day about the outbreak of COVID-19, trusted news journalism is as important as ever. But the business of covering the news costs money, and over the last few weeks, some local newsrooms have furloughed or laid off reporters, editors, and other people responsible for getting the facts to you. Veteran journalist Andy Conti is the founding director of the Center for Media Innovation at Point Park University. Good to talk with you again, Andy.
Thanks for having me on.
Andy, according to CNN Business, since the start of March, more than 300 journalists in local newsrooms have been furloughed or laid off. Here in Pittsburgh, the Tribune Review has laid off 35 people so far. The Pittsburgh Catholic, which has been publishing for 175 years, has suspended operations. And Pittsburgh Magazine, effective today, seems to have laid off its staff. Should we expect even more bad news?
Yeah, it's a frightening time for journalism. We're seeing a real paradox in which a lot of the news outlets are seeing more clicks than ever before. They're getting more attention. People want the news more than ever. But at the same time, revenue has just evaporated. And it evaporated so quickly over a matter of days whenever the governor put out his, order to not leave your home and restaurants had to go to takeout only. People stopped advertising, events were canceled. And so revenue just disappeared almost overnight from the editors I've talked with.
With so many shutdowns locally and across the country, arts groups, small businesses, major corporations, none of them are buying ads right now. Is that what's fueling all of this?
It's really difficult to know exactly because a lot of these are private corporations and private companies. But from the editors I've talked with, it's been anywhere from 70 to 85% of their revenue just evaporated over a matter of days. As soon as the governor put out the order for people to not leave their homes and not go to restaurants, that money just disappeared. And so newsrooms are looking at it and saying, well, what do we do in that case? How do we batten down and weather through this, knowing that the revenue's gone now, but then on the other end, when we come out of this, revenue is going to come back. And will there still be news outlets in places where all those people who were advertising before, where are they going to put their ads in the future? And that's one of the concerns, too. Is there going to be enough room, places to place ads whenever it comes back?
No news, good news, I guess. But should we be worried about the Post-Gazette?
I think a lot of people have been worried about the Post-Gazette for a long time, right? I don't really know what their financial situation is now, but presumably they're going through the same sorts of stresses that everyone else is. And we've seen that they've been faced with, even before the pandemic, they were faced with the same sort of stresses that were facing the news industry across the board. So yeah, I think anyone who's concerned about the local news ecosystem should be looking at all the players in it and wondering, what is this going to look like when we come out of it? And then how are we going to rebuild it?
Several outlets are trying membership models. I think of City Paper, Pittsburgh Current, the Jewish Chronicle, the Incline, Next Pittsburgh. Do you think that could keep those outlets alive right now?
I mean, certainly think so. I mean, it's a different way for them to diversify their revenue. And in some cases, it feels like a last-ditch effort. You know, these were places that relied heavily on advertising and, in some cases, subscriptions. And they're going to their readers and saying, if you really value what we do, we need your help. And I think it's also, we have to be cognizant and realize, obviously, a lot of individuals are hurting at this time, too. So if you don't have the money to support your news outlet, you lost your job, you're down and out, everyone understands. But if you're in a place where you can contribute and you can do something and you've just been putting it off, now's the time to get up and support local journalism.
Andy Conti from the Center for Media Innovation is our guest. Andy, I haven't heard of TV or radio stations laying anyone off, unless they've been more quiet about it. Are they also sharing these concerns?
So TV in particular has been going through a process of getting leaner over the last several years anyway. They've been really cutting back and trying to go with, bare minimum of what they needed to get the news out there. And so I think they're also reliant on a different kind of advertising revenue. You know, there's still a lot of television ads that are being played and people are buying ads, corporations and advertisers are still buying in a way that they wouldn't for someplace like the City Paper or the Tribune Review that's more reliant on local restaurants and organizations for advertising.
Whether it's local or national, a lot of print organizations have been offering free access to coronavirus coverage online. So while they need the advertising revenue now more than ever, they again are giving it to us for free. Many individuals, even if they wanted to, won't even be in a position to give or subscribe right now. As you look ahead, at least on a local level, do you think foundations should be supporting all types of media, not just nonprofit outlets like WESA, WQED, Public Source, for example?
So we were in the process at the Center for Media Innovation of starting a Pittsburgh media partnership. WESA is one of the members. We have 20 media outlets across the region that had agreed to come together to work on a collaborative reporting project. This was all before the pandemic. This started back in the fall. And the organizations had agreed to, you know, that there are some stories that we can do together that are bigger than any one organization could do on its own. And we were this week supposed to roll out our project. We have a project idea that we were all going to work on. We've decided to push that back for a few months because of what's going on with the pandemic. And so we're going to use the resources. We have $30,000 to support local journalism. We're going to be using that over the coming weeks and months to help our local news organizations who are partners of the group to weather this storm, to tell unique stories about the pandemic. And then once we get out of it, you know, to go back to focusing on the bigger stories that we had planned all along. But that is a perfect example of how foundations have stepped up across the region, how they are stepping up across the region to support journalism, not only right now during the pandemic, but always. They've been big supporters here. We've been fortunate in Pittsburgh to have good foundation support for the entire ecosystem and not just for, you know, the few outlets that you mentioned that are nonprofit.
What advice would you have for a journalist who's been laid off or is worried that that might be happening soon at a time like this? What should they do?
It's a really difficult question for journalists all across the region, but I think it's something that we need to start thinking ahead of now. What is this going to look like when we come out of the pandemic? The media ecosystem is going to look entirely different when we come out of it on the other end. You know, what's going to be left and what are people going to be hungry for? And so it's a question for journalists now to sit back and say, well, yeah, this is a difficult time, but how can we evolve and how can we innovate? Those journalists need to be ready to figure out what are the new ways of telling these stories and how can we go about serving the communities that we've always served.
Andy Conti is the founding director of the Center for Media Innovation at Point Park University. Andy, thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me on.
I'm Kevin Gavin.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kylie Kaczynski. People usually come together to grieve, holding a service to honor the dearly departed, and some sitting together at home for a week. But during a pandemic, during this time of social distancing and limited gatherings, the way people grieve has been forced to change. Joining me to discuss what funerals look like during the coronavirus is Roland Costin Criswell, president of Costin Funeral Homes here in Pittsburgh. Roland, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You've instituted some policies to protect employees, clients, and guests, like limiting the number of people at a service and eliminating limousine rides to cemeteries. Walk me through how a funeral today is different from a funeral, say, last month.
Well, first and foremost, a funeral today does not involve an initial meeting with her clients like we used to. Initially, we would go to every client, have a staff member sit down with them and explain to them the process. Now this is done over the phone or via email. Secondly, the arrangement process, we are encouraging our funeral directors to meet individuals over Zoom or FaceTime versus actually sitting down with families for the arrangement process. If we do have to sit down with families, we try to limit it to two people from the family. And thirdly, we have limited our services to one event, and that event must not have more than 8 guests from the family. And so really we're seeing families only have a visitation and not having a funeral service.
So that 8 guests would be 8 people are allowed in the building. It's not like 8 people at a time for a few minutes and then you rotate out and include other people. Is that correct?
Exactly.
How have people reacted to limiting the arrangement meetings, limiting the services? Have you gotten some upset clients?
Yes, we have had some clients who have decided not to use our funeral service because they did not want to abide by the Center for Disease Control's guidelines. and my staff is worried about their own health. And so an example of eliminating limousine service to keep my staff out of the close confines of the public, that's something we decided to do as a company. Some guests are understanding. Some of my clients have decided to have a private service or viewing at this time and have a public service later on. Some of my guests have decided to even postpone their services.
Is it safe to assume most funeral homes are abiding by these recommendations from the CDC? Do you see or have you heard of funeral homes skirting these rules?
It is safe to say that most funeral homes are abiding by the CDC's guidelines. I think there was a question as to the rotation of guests, and our state association knew that. So they came out with the memo after Governor Wolf's order that the rotation of guests was not allowed. It has to be an event with 10 or less guests.
Have you noticed an increase in the number of people choosing to cremate their loved one?
Yes. We have seen some of our clients who have said, well, if we can't have a service with more than 10 guests, then we will opt to cremate. The public I serve, we very much have value in funeral services. So even with a cremation, my clients all tend to have, 90% of my clients have a service prior to the cremation. So I don't think that this pandemic is going to push people away from having services. If anything, I think it's going to cause people to value a service because a service is essential to the grieving process. And I think that they will come to learn that even more.
So you've seen more people opt to postpone services or to have these smaller services in place of something bigger in the future. Have you explored virtual services? I know you're using Zoom for the process to plan the funeral. Have people expressed interest in maybe using Zoom to pay their respects and to gather in that sort of way?
Oh, we have offered it. We've done it in the past. I would say the clients I serve, my community, really a funeral service is like a family reunion. And so people want to be able to see, touch, and hear and be with one another. It's not so much the body as much as it is getting together around the presence of the deceased.
Coston Funeral Homes offers counseling for those who are grieving. Has that evolved under the pandemic?
No, I don't think that that is the forefront of people's minds. I think that their own health, as well as the frustration of not having a service, is at the forefront of their mind. Later on, we do offer aftercare services. It'll be interesting to see if people will make use of that counseling because they have not had the grieving process that they're accustomed to.
Yeah. Can you speak to that? Like the idea of postponing the grieving process?
Oh, I think that's going to be something that people are going to have to wrestle with moving forward as far as not being able to go through the grieving process. I believe years from now, I'll be sitting with clients and they'll tell me, you know, I never really got through that grieving process, or I never healed properly because we did not have a funeral service for mom or dad. I think that that is something society is going to have to wrestle with in a year or two from now.
Roland Criswell Coston is the president of Coston Funeral Homes here in Pittsburgh. Roland, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Kylie Kaczynski.
It's The Confluence. I'm Kevin Gavin. Wildflowers and trees are starting to bud and show they're green, but are they in sync? The Allegheny Front's Kara Holsoppel headed out before the coronavirus shutdown with researchers who are studying the impact of climate change on the timing of nature.
Spring is one of Mason Heberling's favorite times of year.
But also as a researcher studying it, so much stuff is happening right now. It keeps us up at night. Oh, I meant to look at that plant. Oh, no.
Heberling is the assistant curator of botany at the Carnegie Museum of Natural History in Pittsburgh. Right now, he and Sarah Kibbing, an assistant professor in the Department of Biological Sciences at the University of Pittsburgh, are at the beginning of a 3-year research project looking at the impacts of climate change and invasive plants on the phenology of trees and wildflowers.
Should we find that spring beauty and see if it's doing anything?
Phenology is the study of biological or seasonal events that occur year to year, which create a series of synced events, like when migratory birds return in the spring and eat the insects that have emerged, or certain wildflower blooms when its pollinators are active. Kibbing and Heberling are hunched over, moving wet brown leaves to the side and looking for signs of the ephemeral spring beauty, Claytonia virginica, that will eventually cover this hillside in tiny blooms here at Beechwood Farms Nature Reserve outside of Pittsburgh. Then the wildflowers will quickly disappear. Ephemeral.
This is going to bother me, so let's walk over there. I know that it's there.
In his previous work with researchers at Boston University, Heberling and colleagues found that in warmer springs, the leaves of plants and trees come out earlier. What surprised them is that trees in the study were leafing out a week earlier than wildflowers, creating a phenological mismatch.
There we are.
It could probably easily be mistaken for grass, but these are actually just the tiny leaves of the Claytonia poking out.
We're not sure exactly how much this mismatch of the overstory leafing out really, really early might affect a plant like this. It would need to be pretty early, we think.
Because spring beauties bloom and are gone so early in the spring. But other wildflower species that bloom later and longer might be shaded out by trees. One theory is that in early spring, when temperatures can fluctuate, trees way up high are sensing the temperature differently than wildflowers on the forest floor. Non-native shrubs that tend to leaf out earlier than native varieties are also a factor. That's Kibbing's specialty.
Some of the first green leafing things you see a couple feet in the air in forest tend to be non-natives.
She says the plant and animal species respond to different temperature and light cues, which signal seasonal changes, or even to the Earth's gravitational shifts. Global warming is changing the behavior of some of the species that rely on temperature cues.
But species that don't make their decisions based only or solely on temperature cues are maybe not changing as quickly.
Kibbing and Heberling will experiment with plots of wildflowers they've planted here, taking them back to the lab and artificially shading them to simulate possible scenarios. And they'll incorporate data from other local sites and the museum's historical botany collection to find out what's been happening with the timing of wildflowers and forest ecosystems over the decades.
The changing of the timing of when these plants are flowering and fruiting affects who eats their seeds, it affects their pollinators. I think there could be a lot of potentially cascading effects as things are all shifting and moving and responding to these changes in climate, which are happening really rapidly.
Heberling says learning about these non-woody plants in the forest ecosystem is also important to preserving biodiversity.
Because there are far more wildflowers than there are trees.
Heberling says though spring continues, the short-term future of their research is a little uncertain due to the precautions the museum and university are taking because of coronavirus. Right now, they're working from home and taking over some of the observational research from grad students, but they're hoping to be able to continue their shading experiments later this spring. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Kara Holsapple.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. To learn more about how the spread of the new coronavirus is affecting our region, go to WESA's coronavirus blog at WESA.fm. The Confluence is also a podcast. Find us wherever you tune in. Special thanks to our team, Helen Wigger, Tom Hurley, Kylie Kosinski, and Megan Harris. Until next time, I'm Kevin Gavin. Please be safe, and I hope you have a good day of good news.